This is Senior Talk, presented by Heartfelt Care at Home on KRDO News Radio, 105.5 FM and 1240 AM. Here is your host, Greg Koopman.
Good morning and welcome to Senior Talk, presented by Heartfelt Care at Home, right here and only on KRDO News Radio 105.5 FM, 1240 AM, and 92.5 FM. I'm Greg Koopman, your host for Senior Talk, founder and owner of Heartfelt Care at Home, Colorado Springs' most trusted senior in-home care provider. Be sure to visit us online today at heartfeltcareathome.com. Joining us in the studio this morning, first-time guest here on Senior Talk, over 6 years and running, and we have yet to have you on the show, our friend Terry Cassidy, owner of Health Promotion Partners. We're going to specifically dive into seniors and driving today. Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning on Senior Talk.
Thank you so much, Greg. Glad to be here.
Fantastic. So take a few moments. I always like to before we dive in, share with our listeners a little bit about your background and really what sparked your passion and brought you to what you're doing today.
Yes, thank you. My background is as an occupational therapist, and so I really come to this whole field of driving from that medical background. I worked in a hospital setting for a long time, and really my goal as an OT is helping people get back to living a full life, doing things that are important to them after an injury or an illness. And I was finding that driving was something that was not being addressed in that context. So I had patients I was working with who we were getting them so much better to go home. But then once they go home, they couldn't leave their house.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So trying to get that full spectrum in terms of care is really how I started getting interested in this and actually developed the driver rehabilitation program that was hospital-based here in Colorado Springs for a long time.
Fantastic. Then you founded Health Promotion Partners, a local small business here. Tell us how that started. What was the final catalyst that said, you know what, we're going to have to address this. You know, driving isn't being addressed. Let's jump off the ledge here and do it ourselves.
Yeah, it was honestly a necessity. The program at the hospital was closed, and so there was nobody in the community providing that service. And so I decided, yes, exactly, to jump in and take that on, and it's been really a very interesting and fun ride so far.
Okay, and I know there's several different programs or services, I guess, and we're going to really hone in on the Fitness to Drive program. Broadly, though, you know, what services does your company offer?
Really, things related to driving education and driving rehabilitation. So I do have some grant funding, and I provide education to medical professionals around older driver safety, and then also direct driving rehabilitation and evaluation services through the Fitness to Drive program.
Fantastic. Now, I'm a numbers guy. I'm full of data. I pulled out some statistics specific to driving. In 2009, 33 million licensed drivers were over the age of 65, 20% increase from 1999, so about a 10-year difference and a 20% increase in the number of senior drivers. By the year 2030, 70 million Americans in the United States will be over the age of 65. 85 to 90% of them will be licensed to drive. It's scary. 2014.
Potentially,
exactly. 2014, nearly 5,700 senior drivers were killed. 221,000 were injured in traffic crashes. Alarming statistics. We're going to dive into that, but tell us about your Fitness to Drive program.
Absolutely. So the Fitness to Drive program is basically a one-on-one evaluation with an individual. And it's about, we schedule a three-hour time frame. It's a really comprehensive evaluation looking at things in the clinic as well as out in the vehicle. So we'll spend about half of that time in my office looking at skills related to driving. So vision, strength, range of motion. We're looking at reaction time, memory, cognition. Kind of, sometimes we don't stop and think about how complex driving is.
Yeah.
So sometimes just when family members observe the evaluation, they're like, oh, wow, it's really a big deal that there's all these people, all those numbers that you discussed, that we're out there driving every day and we just kind of take it for granted. So sometimes the evaluation makes you realize all of the skills that are required.
and probably regardless of the age of the driver.
Absolutely.
You just named off a whole bunch of things, and I'm wondering if I would pass the test to do that. So that's a whole nother topic. We'll go down that rabbit hole later. But so paint us a picture. I call you up. We set up a time to do this evaluation. Paint our listeners a picture of what this evaluation process looks like.
Yes. So first of all, just one thing with calling me up, I do also need a referral from a doctor.
Okay.
So that's just one piece in the intake process. That's really just for communication purposes more than anything else. But there's usually a medical reason and we want the doctor in the loop. Somebody would come in and family is welcome to be there. We would do that first part of the session in my office, really getting a thorough background, finding out what's going on, getting to know that person and really what their roles and routines around driving are. Because honestly, driving environments are different for different people.
Right.
And a lot of people that I see, especially in this older adult category, they're not commuting to Denver. You know, that they have restricted their driving in some ways, and I take that into consideration when we're looking at what the needs are.
Okay.
So we do that first part of the evaluation, and then 95% of the time, we'll go out in my driver evaluation vehicle and go for a drive.
Okay.
Occasionally, it's just not even safe to go that extra step.
So first you do the office visit, determine whether or not you feel comfortable with them driving you.
Yes.
Not a stick shift. It's an automatic.
It is an automatic, right? Very comfortable vehicle. Gas and brake on the passenger side is why we take my vehicle.
Okay.
And we just start out in a neighborhood. You know, the entire process is meant to be non-intimidating, non-threatening. I'm really there as a rehabilitation professional trying to help people just identify as ways to stay safe. So
comfortable. I shouldn't be nervous,
exactly.
You know.
And it doesn't help to
this.
Say that because everybody's nervous anyway.
Don't be nervous.
But
that just makes me nervous.
People say, like, should I study? What should I do to prepare? And really, no. I mean, sure, but the testing I'm doing isn't things you would study for.
Right. Well, I mean, this is, you want to know what their normal routine,
right,
their habits, their ability is like. So you can't study for that. I mean, you're judging them in their own environments on the side streets. You know, a lot of folks probably don't get onto I-25. So I imagine you're not saying, hey, let's hop on the interstate. And
it does vary. So
okay.
We have a couple of standard routes that we'll take depending on what their typical driving is. And so the full route is pretty challenging. I mean,
okay,
we'll do I-25, we'll go downtown, we have quite a range. But if that's not, if like you said, somebody doesn't ever drive on the interstate, we won't be assessing that part.
Okay.
And then a lot of times, if they live nearby or if they go to places nearby, we'll do a navigational part of that too. So I may have them drive me to the grocery store that they go to or to their church or just something that's familiar as well,
yeah,
to get an idea of what I call the strategic level of driving, of when they're in their car by themselves, not following directions, but making decisions on their own. How does that go?
How do they do? Okay. So you get the office portion, you get in the car, we're doing the driving evaluation. How long are they driving? I mean, what's the time frame for that part of the exam?
It's about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
So enough time for me to really get an idea,
okay,
of how things are going. And then we'll come back, and so the family does not go in the car,
okay,
portion with me generally, but I really do like to have family there at the end, and so we'll come back and kind of have a consultation discussion, pros and cons, what went well. Honestly, sometimes the clinical portion and the behind the wheel don't match up very
right.
well, I would say particularly with something like mild cognitive impairment or dementia or something like that that's in an early stage. The clinical testing may indicate a fair amount of impairment, and the on the road sometimes is really still quite good.
Yeah.
And so we talk about kind of what that means, how to interpret that, and also what that means for the future. Because usually with a dementia diagnosis, if the result is, I think you're good to keep driving for a while, there's always kind of a time-limited piece to that with any progressive condition.
Sure. So you type up your summary, the results of the evaluation, and then do you communicate that to the doctor? Does the family just take that and say, all right, you know, you passed this time, but we'll come back in 6 months? How does that look?
Yes. So
are you cutting up their driver's license right
I
there on the spot?
I do not do that. Don't even say that out loud. Oh, my goodness.
Terry does not cut up your driver's license.
I don't
that
take
is my
your
disclaimer.
Keys. I do emphasize that it really is a family and physician decision. So I'm giving, I really see my role as using my expertise to give data and to give results to the family and to the doctor. So my report does go back to the referring doctor and to the client. You know, usually they would like a copy of the report too. And from there, if anything needs to be reported further, that would be from the physician side of things.
Okay. So they have to have a doctor's referral in order to participate in this program. Here's a good question. What if they don't have a primary physician? A lot of seniors specifically don't have primary physicians these days. They're utilizing and overutilizing urgent cares and things like that rather than having a primary physician. So how does that work?
You know, it's a good question. Honestly, I have not had that be a barrier very often.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a primary care physician in my case.
A physician.
Oftentimes it may be as a neurologist. It may be, if I'm seeing somebody after a stroke or a brain injury or a dementia diagnosis, there's usually a physician involved. So in that case, there is. Occasionally, I have had somebody maybe discharged from a rehab hospital, doesn't have a PCP yet. It's a good reason to start with one. So sometimes there's a little bit of delay while they work that piece out, but I do think the medical oversight is really important
okay.
in the whole process.
So you mentioned a few different scenarios there as far as health conditions. Really, who is the ideal candidate to participate in this program?
That's a really good question. And ideal, that's an interesting word in this context. There are quite a few scenarios where I would say ideal. Certainly, concerns about cognitive impairment. I feel like I would love to see individuals early on in that process, really with the hope of having them continue driving, but having those discussions about eventual driving retirement and having the family on board. Those can be really difficult discussions. So I feel like the earlier, the better. And if we can end up with a result of, yes, keep driving to these five locations for other destinations, let's involve family or Silver Key or something like that. I think that can be a really good outcome for families.
Absolutely.
Also, in terms of ideal, I think of equipment. So I do work with adaptive driving equipment, such as hand controls, left foot accelerator. So if someone's got a physical impairment that's keeping them from driving like they were driving before their injury, or you know, maybe a peripheral neuropathy or something like that, I have equipment in my vehicle that they can try out. We can do training and help them in the process of having equipment put in their vehicle. So that's really fantastic when I see people who thought they had to stop driving because of an amputation, for example, or because they had a stroke and their right leg isn't working as well as it used to. But otherwise, there's no reason. So it's really nice to see people get back to driving with just a little bit of
assistance.
That's great.
So it sounds like there are resources there. So rather than looking at this as only or exclusively, am I still capable of driving, is it still safe for me to drive? This could also be for folks who maybe had an amputation or stroke or something, and finding resources to give them some of that independence back if those resources and tools can be implemented and they can safely drive.
Yes, certainly.
It works both ways.
Works both ways.
Okay.
And I know we're here talking about seniors. I do see individuals of all ages.
Okay.
But certainly, majority of my clients are seniors, and a lot of them are coming for adaptive equipment. So it's not something that people are too old for.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, I see people in their 70s and 80s who are learning to drive with hand controls, for example.
Okay. Now, is there a more common scenario than not that you see folks? I mean, is it more cognitive impairment? Is it more post-stroke? I mean, is there a common top one or two scenario where people are calling you?
Top two would be the two you just mentioned.
Okay.
So post-stroke is probably the most common diagnosis that I see. Again, all ages, and then mild cognitive impairment is right up there as well.
Okay. Costs. That's always the big question. It is in our field. It is with most senior care-related services. Are there any costs associated with this?
There are. So it is a private pay program, and so for the three-hour evaluation, the cost is $385, and that people often ask about, does insurance cover that and things like that? And it's just not at this time considered medically necessary. I would argue some of that in terms of driving. It's certainly valuable, but with current restrictions, it is not covered.
Okay. but don't let that be a barrier to calling you. So that's definitely something where $385 versus not driving, or knowing that your loved one is not safe driving and you need a little bit of support and backup to make that final decision from a medical standpoint, definitely a valuable service. How do listeners get in touch with you to find out more details about this program, how to set up an evaluation, how they can have you tell them they got to get that referral from that doctor, and how to facilitate that?
Sure. The two best ways are my phone. So just give me a call at 719-231-6657. There's also a lot of information about the services that we provide on our website. So that's www.healthpromotionpartners.com.
Fantastic. I'm going to dive into some more data and statistics. It's a nice segue to lead into more questions. According to AAA, your driving organization there, although Americans are healthier and living longer than ever before, seniors are outliving their ability to drive safely by an average of 7 to 10 years, is what AAA says. 50% of middle-aged population and 80% of people over the age of 70 suffer from arthritis, crippling inflammation of joints. This can make turning, flexing, twisting painful and difficult. Weaker muscles, reduced flexibility, limited range of motion could restrict senior drivers' ability to grip, turn the steering wheel, press on the accelerator, the brake. More than 75% of drivers over the age of 65 report using one or more medications, which I imagine can add a whole different dynamic into the safety of driving. So I'm going to paint a picture, Terry. If I'm a senior driver, maybe you have a loved one who's a senior driver, what red flags or warning signs should I be aware of or be on the lookout for that might indicate it's time to give you a call?
That's a great question. And I think I'm glad you brought up all of the data there and the statistics, because if I can just go back to that
moment.
Absolutely.
Highlight it and put an exclamation mark right
there.
After
we go.
It.
The one about the outliving our ability to drive, mm-hmm. I think is a really fascinating finding, and something I talk a lot about with clients, more from a perspective of, I feel like in the past, driving has been an issue that's dealt with very internally. Maybe not even the doctor involved, just a family dealing with having this discussion with their family member. But when you think about things like that, this is an issue that will affect all of us.
Absolutely.
And we're out there sharing these roads, all of these things. So it really becomes a bit of a societal issue that we all need to be paying attention to and not be afraid to talk about with our families, but with doctors and kind of in environments like this. So I think that perspective on just the older driver population as a really positive thing, but just realizing that at some point we're going to have to make decisions, all of us,
and that's okay.
About our driving.
It's normal.
And it's normal. So normalizing that. Another thing in terms of the medications is a really good thing to bring up. And just age-related changes. To me, driving is not so much about, or issues with driving are not so much about age. You know, it's really about function. So I see people of all ages, and it's how, maybe it's age, maybe it's medical conditions, how those are impacting a lot of the things that you brought up, their strength, their range of motion, their vision, that typically do, you see more difficulty with that as people get older, but it varies quite a bit. I wanted to bring up a program called CarFit.
Okay.
And that is a community-based program, but it's a national program developed by AAA, AARP, and the American Occupational Therapy Association.
Okay.
And that is one, getting back to your original question of what are the warning signs?
What are the red flags? Yeah.
That is one program, not so much designed for red flags, but designed for safety in your vehicle. So it's not an evaluation program, but someone would come into an event. It's free. There's a 20-minute checkup. So you drive in your car, and there's a trained technician who's looking at seatbelt position, steering wheel position, access to gas and brake, mirror adjustment. So it's this 12-point checklist of how is this person using the safety features in their vehicle.
Right.
And then a bunch of resources and stuff like that. So that's just a really great event, and I can get you more information on upcoming events
Sure. For
that. Back to red flags. I think the most common thing we hear is, well, I don't drive with my dad anymore.
Okay.
He still drives, but I won't get in the car with him. So there's something to that, like to maybe investigate a little further, or I won't let my kids be in the car with them.
Don't ride with grandma and grandpa. There's your red flag. If you have any concern about the safety of your life or other people's lives, it sounds like that's the biggest red flag.
Is that a
natural
one.
Instinct?
Yes, and usually there's reasons for that decision that's made.
You used to have a mailbox. Now you've had six more.
So those are more red flags.
Okay.
In terms of like scrapes and dents on the car and honestly getting lost or confused while driving.
Yeah.
One suggestion for families, even though I just said there's a lot of times a family say, well, if we drive somewhere together, I'm the driver. One suggestion is to be the passenger every couple of months, just so you do have an idea of how your parent is driving or spouse or something like that. Is really one way to get an idea of how it's going.
First-hand experience, keep a pulse on it. And you brushed on, going with that, and you brushed on it a little bit earlier, you know, how do seniors typically respond when addressing, you know, their drive, you know, concerns that you have with their driving? Are there any tips or advice on how to approach what is likely a very delicate topic? When you throw in independence, and most folks in their 80s and 90s are what I call fiercely independent, you're touching on a very personal, delicate topic. Any advice or tips?
You're absolutely right. It's a very delicate topic. There are some great publications out there that deal with this directly, and I can get you the links for those, but through the Hartford. And one of them is called We Need to Talk, Family Conversations with Older Drivers. And it's very respectfully put together. I think a first step is acknowledging that this is really not just about transportation. You know, for most people, most seniors, driving represents so many things, like you just mentioned, independence. It's a part of who they are and who they were. And so having an appreciation for that is really an important piece. But then I like to also shift to ultimately what's the goal? Social engagement, getting to church, getting to the grocery store. Are there ways that we can help you make those connections even if you're not the driver? So if you can help in that kind of shift of thinking, that can be helpful. But it's a highly individual discussion, that's for sure.
Talk about it, be positive about it would probably be good advice as well, and understanding of their feelings. I mean, that's the biggest confrontation I see or challenge I see when working with our clients is seeing firsthand the struggle that seniors specifically have with losing that independence, the freedom, the ability to go where you want, when you want, is a big deal. On the other hand, I see a lot of seniors who take great pride in acknowledging when it's time to no longer drive and say, you know what? I mean, I had one just a new client came on board with Heartfelt a few weeks ago, and she said, you know what? I stopped driving on my own a year ago. I knew it was time. And she took a lot of pride in that, and I thought that was just a phenomenal thing to be able to see. So I think how you respond and how you word it and how you approach it, it can be a positive thing.
I think it can be. And I do think it's really important to acknowledge that and also acknowledge, you know, to me, the goal is not for everybody over a certain age to stop driving. You know, like there is a tendency sometimes, I will say, research showing more for women than men to over-restrict. And so much of our society and our culture is dependent on interaction in the community.
Right.
So I really don't want to encourage people to stop driving when they still have the skill to do so. And so, yes, finding that balance of my vision's gotten to a point where it's not safe. How else can I get there? Versus someone saying, well, you turned 80, you should stop driving. You know, like trying to find that
balance.
And
I'm thrilled about what you offer because you're that impartial balance, you know, the neutral in the middle that can go either way, you know, whether you're promoting, no, you're doing fine, Mrs. Johnson, or, all right, here are some of the things that we've identified. Let's work with our medical professionals to adjust our daily routine. And
yes.
I think that unbiased resource is a phenomenal asset to our community. And one of the first times I've seen a program like this in 16 years of senior care. So glad to see what you're doing. Absolutely. You touched on this briefly, and we're starting to run a little bit low on time, but I want to dive in a little bit. How does memory and cognitive impairment fit into the equation of senior drivers?
Yes.
I mean, you get the statistic, once you hit the age of 80, 1 in 2 seniors 80 years old or older have some sort of dementia.
That's alarming. It's a tough topic for a short period of time. But
And you've got 10 seconds.
Yes, go. Honestly, the biggest concern a lot of times is not the basic operation of the vehicle. People often have this, they've been driving for 60 years. They can get in the car and maneuver the vehicle. But kind of those greater cognitive skills. So the biggest thing you see is people getting lost. And you think of like, oh, somebody getting turned around in a neighborhood. But the real concern is somebody gets on I-25 the wrong way. Or they, you know, I've gotten calls, oh, my dad was found in Trinidad. You know, like, so it is a really scary topic, this whole thing of getting lost and something to take seriously. And then judgment overall of, and I think that's just such a hard thing with dementia. People often don't see those deficits. So we're talking about this woman who identified, you know, it's probably not a good idea for me to drive anymore. Dementia just kind of gets in the way of making those decisions about yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Before we go, let's get your contact information out one more time here, Terry. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Thank you. So my phone number at Health Promotion Partners is 719-231-6657. And our website is healthpromotionpartners.com.
Fantastic. So any final words of advice for listeners who may be questioning their ability, a loved one's ability to safely drive as they continue to age and thrive and hold on to that independence? Any words of advice? Final words of wisdom?
I would really just encourage people to be open to discussion. So if you're having some of these concerns, talk to your doctor about it. Talk to your family about it. Oftentimes, that's not the first response. People don't want to mention it to anybody. But involve some conversation and try to get some feedback, because it's not always a bad thing. That bringing up that topic is not always a bad thing.
Yeah. Just approach it delicately and talk about it. Excellent.
Yes.
Terry Cassidy, owner of Health Promotion Partners. We talked about our fitness to drive program here today. Thank you so much for coming on the show, talking with our listeners. And we're going to have you back, and we could go on and on. I've got 2 more pages of data and statistics that I wanted your opinion on if they were myths or facts. But one more time, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, thank you so much, Greg. And my phone number is 719-231-6657. And the website is healthpromotionpartners.com. And it was a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you so much. Before we go, I want to remind listeners that you can find out more information about Heartfelt Care at Home online at heartfeltcareathome.com or by giving us a call at 719-362-0094. Again, that's 719-362-0094. Be sure to join us next Sunday and every Sunday at 8 a.m. right here and only on KRDO News Radio 105.5 FM, 1240 a.m. and 92.5 FM for another edition of Senior Talk, presented by Heartfelt Care at Home.